Testing 1, 2, 3. Testing 1, 2, 3.
Pretrial conference in the Spring Users case. I'd like first for those persons who are physically present to identify themselves for the record.
Phil Rassier with the Idaho Department of Water Resources.
Dan Steenson for Blue Lakes Trout Farm.
John Simpson for Clear Springs Foods.
Chris Bromley, IDWR.
Jeff Faraday with Gibbons Pursley for the Idaho Dairymen Association. I have with me today one of our interns, Liz Donick, who's from Vermont Law School and will be observing today.
Randy Budge and Candace McHugh for Idaho Groundwater Appropriators, Inc., North Snake, and Magic Valley Groundwater Districts.
Victoria Weigel, IDWR.
Lynn Tominaga, Idaho Groundwater Appropriators.
Bob McLaughlin, IDWR Public Information.
Tom Arkush, observing.
Ray Williams, Department of Water Resources.
Will those persons who are on the telephone connection please identify yourselves for the record?
This is J.D. May. I'm here representing Rangan, Inc.
Rob Williams on behalf of the city interveners.
Michael Gilmore on behalf of the state agency groundwater users.
Cindy Yenter, Water District 130, IDWR.
Thank you. Let's start with a basic question on timing. Is anybody going to be commuting, or is everybody going to be camped in Boise? We'll set the times according to conveniences of schedule if anybody's traveling. Anybody traveling?
I'll be commuting from Eagle.
That takes
this
long.
This is Rob Williams, and I will be commuting on some days.
Okay.
This is J.D. May. I may be commuting, Your Honor, on some days as well.
Okay.
But my partner, Justin May, will be present at all times.
If anybody that is commuting can just give us enough advance warning, we can adjust a little bit on the time, but I just don't want to inconvenience witnesses that are expecting to be here at a certain time and have to start later. But just give us some advance warning on that. Okay, what's a good starting time for you? Normal is 9 o'clock. If that works, we'll do that. If somebody'd like a different time, we'll talk about it. Okay, we'll start at 9 o'clock. Unless we adjust in the course to travel needs or to witness needs.
This is Rob Williams. I'll probably be commuting more than anyone. 9 o'clock is fine.
Oh, is it? Good. Thanks.
That is fine, Your Honor, as well. This is J.D. May.
Okay. Did somebody else just come on the line?
Lynn Carlquist with North Snake Groundwater District just came on.
Thank you. The order of witnesses, have you talked about among yourselves the order of testimony or when it's convenient to have your witnesses present? I will tell you in advance that as far as I'm concerned, the order of proof or order burdens won't be affected by the order in which you call witnesses. I've read so much of this record at this point that I don't think I'm going to be overwhelmed by a witness coming first and being able to erase it from my mind. So have you agreed upon any order?
Well, we haven't, Your Honor. We have some thoughts on the order of witnesses, and I'd be happy to share those with you.
Go ahead.
Well, and Mr. Simpson, correct me if I misstate, but we thought that it might make sense to have Clear Springs and Blue Lakes go first with their witnesses, our witnesses, to describe the facilities. That I take it you've not seen an aquaculture facility before, and so we thought it would be helpful to give you an introduction to how they operate and have our lay witnesses testify first. And then our intention is to call several departmental witnesses to elicit testimony regarding the 2005 orders. Much of that testimony will, of course, overlap. And then we thought to call one or more of our expert witnesses, right, John? To address issues that we are aware of pertaining to the orders. And then our thinking was that it would make sense for the groundwater users to present their testimony and thereafter have an opportunity for rebuttal witnesses with respect to the direct testimony that had been presented. And we thought that order would make sense. Again, our thinking was that it was not, the order would not necessarily have to do with the burdens of proof or burden of proof, but it would make some chronological sense in terms of what occurs first in a call proceeding, and that is to have the seniors who assert that they're short make their presentation and then go forward from there with the director's response and the groundwater users be able to present the issues that they have with respect to the orders.
Your Honor, we would, on behalf of the Darren and Jeff Faraday, we would anticipate that our witnesses would be presented at the end of the groundwater users' IGWAs and the groundwater district's witnesses. That we would.
Your Honor, this is J.D. May. I represent Rangan Inc. as an intervener. We only have one witness, Your Honor, on just one issue, and if it would be all right, we would like to go after Blue Lakes and Clear Springs expert witnesses, or right in conjunction with them, if that would be appropriate.
Then, if I might also, Your Honor, further, our assumption was that the initial presentations would relate to the underlying 2005 orders, and that there would be subsequent testimony depending on what has been presented and where you stand with respect to the case on the mitigation plans and orders that were provided and issued in 2005, 06, and 07.
What's your view of it?
Well, I think generally that would be basically fine. It would seem like Clear Springs and Blue Lakes made the call and they should go first and put their witnesses on. And I think Rangan following them would seem to be fine. And then the groundwater users with our witnesses and the dairymen, the city, whatever order they would like. I do have a couple of questions on where the department witnesses should lie. It would seem appropriate that they all be put on either at the beginning of the case so that all experts could have an opportunity to address, if appropriate, something that might come out on that, or at the very end of the case. And I believe all of the directors or all department witnesses are readily available except Mr. Dreyer. So Mr. Dreyer, I understand that we've got kind of a date that we have to take him when he's available, which is mid-December.
Well, he had a series of dates, but one set was the week of the 17th through the 21st, so the hearing presently is scheduled to go through the 18th, so it's the last 2 days would be the 17th and 18th, but he could be available those days. The other days he had was December 5th through the 7th. 10th and 11th.
It seemed we better get him on the 5th through the 7th. I think we hopefully are done long before the 17th through the 21st.
Yeah. I think it would be best to get him on early. If this moves quickly, there's no reason to dangle it.
The other
arrangements?
I guess we can get into this once we get the order. Dan made the comment on rebuttal witnesses. The expert testimony has already been filed with rebuttal, so I assume you're simply referring to the possibility of some lay rebuttal testimony.
Well, I don't know about lay rebuttal testimony only. I think that's a possibility.
Well,
but perhaps perhaps rebuttal testimony of experts is not necessary, given that it's already been filed.
Well, that would be my view. It's not whether it's necessary or not. I don't think it's appropriate. We set a deadline for direct rebuttal, and that's been filed. I certainly wouldn't want to see reason that somebody, the expert, comes back on to file a rebuttal or whatever you call it.
Well, I think the only thought that when Dan and I discussed this idea of how to go forward and such was, if there was an issue that was presented during the trial, I mean, live testimony, either on cross-examination or re-examination of an expert witness, if that were allowed, then how the opportunity for either side to bring their expert back in, if it's an issue that hadn't been directly presented and was the subject of some testimony during the hearing process. I can't envision that right now, but I guess...
As to the rebuttal of the department's witnesses, which might be new information, that may be appropriate. And that's why I was thinking, if your experts went on after Dreher, if we get Dreher on pretty early, then if there was some new issue that got brought up by a department witness. But insofar as there shouldn't be any new issues requiring rebuttal from any other experts, because...
I would agree. With respect to the department witnesses, it seems as if we had witnesses, department employees or past employees that were involved in the initial order, and then we potentially had other folks that may have been involved in, are primarily involved in the implementation of the order regarding mitigation and the adequacy of mitigation. And from my perspective, at least, it would seem as if it would be appropriate to, as Dan stated, to concentrate the initial presentation on the issue of the call being made and the order that was issued and issues involving that order or the call being made. And perhaps such as with the dairymen and their issue on mitigation and the appropriateness of their mitigation, should that be not necessarily a subsequent hearing in terms of at a later date, other than once we finish with the primary case, it's then moved to the mitigation issues themselves, so that there's some break, if you will, in the presentation on those issues.
That was the point you brought up before, and I think we had a ruling that the hearing was going to subsume all proceedings, both the orders and the mitigation plan. I don't have a problem putting them at the end.
And that's what I meant, Randy, was
okay.
Just at the end, after we go through with our presentation back and forth, and if to the extent there are mitigation issues, we can start the next day, if you will, on a presentation of mitigation issues and not wrap those in necessarily to...
Most of them are already wrapped in by the testimony. So, to the extent we have experts and lay witnesses, they've already presented. At least some of them have some testimony, I think. I didn't want to see a separate proceeding where experts and lay witnesses come back to address something. I think it all needs to be in a single proceeding. That's the way we've...
Right. And I'm not saying separate proceeding in terms of two-week delay or whatever, just simply perhaps starting, if we finish with our case in chief, starting the next day then with issues involving the mitigation plan, so that if there's a ruling on the mitigation plan issues, perhaps the testimony is divided so that someone can
put your witnesses on once for the direct case and then bring them back, the same witnesses again for the mitigation.
I think if there are those sorts of witnesses, but I'm not certain there are that many of those witnesses themselves.
Well, from the dairyman's perspective, we, of course, intend to participate throughout the hearing, but put on our direct case at the end, if you will, which has to do with the mitigation and adequacy, and so forth, as you say.
Well, and I'm assuming, for example, with the former director Dreher, that he'll present his testimony and you'll cross-examine on why your plan, as you understood it to be submitted, was not accepted. and an order was entered that was different from the one you contemplated, and that that will already be on the table, and then you'll present your evidence at the end.
That's an excellent example, Your Honor.
That would seem to fall logically. I think it'll fall a lot more logically than it may appear up front.
So. Your Honor, this is Rob Williams. I haven't chimed in, but having the cities at the end of the presentation of the groundwater users case is fine with us. I would like to hear, before we're done today, from the spring users as to whether they anticipate cross-examining any of the lay witnesses that we submitted pre-filed testimony for.
And Mr. Williams, I'm not sure I've seen that information come across my desk, at least. So I'm not sure I'm in a position to respond to that, given that the disclosure date was yesterday.
So we timely filed it.
And I'm not saying you didn't, Rob.
I've got the notice of service here that you were served with that on October 17th.
Well, I don't know. This is Dan Steenson. I don't know. I've been trying to get pretrial briefs filed on time and attend depositions, so I just haven't attended to that, and we'll let you know before the hearing.
That'd be fine.
Seems like it might help once we get the order of who's going to go first, if we identify how each witness will come in. Generally, if you want to do your lay witnesses first, your expert witnesses first, just so we can prepare across accordingly.
I would think, of course, during the course of the trial, I would like whoever's presenting evidence to give a list as early as they can as to the next witness and witnesses that will be called. But you're talking about backing it up some before that to have an order of witnesses, order of testimony,
sure,
as quickly
just
as possible.
Just gently. I mean, obviously, we can move them around a little, but whether the lay ones are going to come first or the experts are going to come first, it would sure help in our preparation.
Dan, when you referred to department witnesses in your order of calling witnesses, does that include the director, or were you thinking of the other department?
That includes the director and Tim Luke and Alan Wiley and Cindy Yenter. And you, Phil?
Sure.
No. No.
Well, perhaps Brian Patton.
Yeah, Brian.
Okay, so for all of those witnesses, other than the director, I'm sure they can be available at any time during the hearing, but Mr. Dreher may not be available at that time in that order, right? When you're presenting your case, if you go first. I guess it depends on how long it's going to take you to present your case.
And his first available date is the 5th of December.
Yeah, that's what he said.
That would be the following Wednesday.
So that's pretty early in the process then, isn't it? Mm-hmm.
But if that's as early as he's available, then we'll have to work that out. But we thought even perhaps a day or two before that.
Okay. Well, those were the dates when I asked him for
well,
the dates.
That yeah, was. We just worked with that. It may be that in that order of presentation that was laid out that some of our experts may have to come on before that in order to fill in that space.
So the other witnesses, are there any complexities with any of the other department witnesses as far as timing?
Well, we asked them for their unavailable dates, and they gave us some dates here. Alan Wiley's unavailable dates are the 12th and the 13th of December. Brian Patton was November 28th, December 11th through the 13th, and the morning of the 14th.
but all of them would be available at the beginning. If we start on the 28th, they would be available on the 28th and could start then if we wanted to begin with those witnesses.
Well, except Brian Patton is not available on the 28th. And then Cindy Yenter just has one date, December 4th, that she's not available. And Tim Luke is not available on November 30th in the morning, December 7th and 21st, December 11th, and the afternoon of the 20th. But you're going to be done by then.
So, Phil, do you contemplate, you made a comment once before that you contemplated presenting the department's case and putting on certain witnesses. Is that still contemplated?
Well, that was what was discussed at the previous yes. pre-hearing conference. I guess it's kind of up to what the hearing officer desires. But, you know, at one point there was the thought of the department at least taking Mr. Dreher through direct, and maybe Allen through direct, but I mean that's not
essential. It seems better to have the department put all the department witnesses on, and then we can all cross-examine them. And if Dreher makes it in time, I guess he won't. If Dreher shows up, we take him, and then go into your eight.
I would think it would be preferable for counsel for the department to make the direct examination. Nobody is happy. And so everybody's going to be in a cross-examination mode after the department puts on the witnesses. And I think the issues are defined well enough, you know, which route they're going to need to testify, and then pick it up on cross-examination from the parties, and then go back to any additional testimony that's necessary. I think that's the to have a neutral, perhaps, setting to begin with, and then get into the confrontational questioning later.
And if we go through the case and something comes up later, we could then recall a department witness for rebuttal on to address your concern, John.
I think that's fair. If that's
we'll start with the department and recall them later if we need them.
It may be somewhat awkward just simply from the fact that in some of these, I use Mr. Wiley as an example, the work that he did with respect to some of the findings in the director's order, and before we have the director coming in and testifying what he did and what he ordered Mr. Wiley to do, that's just process-wise, that's a little bit out of line. But perhaps if that's the case, and after Mr. Dreher testifies that someone has the need, they believe, to recall Mr. Wiley, for example, and based upon the testimony of Mr. Dreher, call Mr. Wiley again to get some further clarification on an issue, they have the ability to do that. But that's just one example that may or may not be an issue depending on how the case, how we get into the case.
Okay, let me, just for clarity, November 28th, what witnesses could you actually have present on that date?
Well, Ellen Wiley could be present. Cindy Yenter could be present. Tim Luke could be present.
And Brian Patton, he's the only one that couldn't be the 28th, so
right.
He could be the next day or whenever.
And he said Patton is due, could be there the
29th, yes.
And we had, in addition to those that you named, we had a representative of Idaho Water Resource Institute, Donna Cosgrove, or Bryce Contour, but I suppose that would only be to the extent that we couldn't get one of the department witnesses to be able to testify on modeling issues and questions.
I don't recall discussion of those witnesses. Maybe I missed that.
Pardon?
I don't recall discussion of those witnesses.
Which witnesses?
The Iwerri witnesses. And I missed a disclosure somewhere along
the way.
Yeah,
we did. But on a limited basis. If the department witnesses can testify about the model and how it works, we won't need them. But I didn't want to not disclose them and have a situation the department witness deferred to the Iwerri witness and said, gee, we can't answer that. We wanted to have the right to get one of those folks to answer.
Now, I guess one problem with just starting out with the department witnesses, we wouldn't get the preview of the facilities that Dan, that you and John intended to present.
Right.
Through your lay witnesses.
Might it still be better to start with that?
How long would that testimony take?
Day and a half.
Yes, max.
I mean, I don't see that big of an issue that if they came after the department employees, for example, their testimony is not dependent upon the employees and their case.
That's just a list of unavailability.
Oh, okay. Thanks. Because, we could start with that on the 28th and then go to the 29th and start with the department witnesses, I suppose.
That's certainly fair. We can do that.
It just seems to set the stage a little bit.
Fair enough.
Let's start with the spring users' background as to the facilities and the process on the 28th. And then move the department witnesses on the 29th, and I don't know how long it's going to take to put that testimony on, but I would suspect a little bit of time.
Yeah.
And then proceed, then go back to the spring users' witnesses.
Then you anticipated Clear Lakes would go first with lay witnesses, and then your expert witnesses, and then come back to Blue Lakes with their lay and their expert.
Well, I think what we would both Snake River Farms, Clear Springs, and Blue Lakes would put on their lay witnesses.
Lay witness first.
Describe facilities and water uses.
And then go to experts last. Yeah.
That would come after the departmental witnesses.
Right.
So, lay witnesses, departmental witnesses, expert witnesses from the spring users, right?
Correct.
Okay. Then groundwater users, and then the Rangan and the cities to follow. Groundwater, is that correct?
I think
I think Rangan was going to come perhaps at the end of the spring users.
Yes.
Oh, okay.
That's
experts.
Correct, Your Honor.
Okay, Rangan after Rangan. Okay.
And then Igwa, and then
and then I think probably the dairies and or the cities. Either way.
Either way, you can work that out
we
by
can
that
work
time.
That out. Either way.
Okay.
So that sound good to you, Rob?
Yeah, that's fine. Fine, Jeff.
I guess what perhaps thinking about timing is that if Carl were available, the director, former director was available on the 5th, depending on how long it took for lay witnesses and then the department employees, we may end up with maybe one day at the most of an overlap with spring user experts before we could bring Carl in and again that order and what the former director did, I think is important to get in as early in the process as we can.
Okay.
So if he were available the 5th.
Okay.
Is that a Monday? I don't know.
5th is a Wednesday.
A Wednesday. Okay. So we would have how many days would we have before the 5th of hearing then?
Let's see, we're starting on a Wednesday, aren't we?
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So we got Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, right. And then Monday, Tuesday.
Okay.
So we could almost set Carl on a specific day and just do him on the 5th?
That's what I'm thinking, yes.
Okay, that'd be fine.
Randy, with respect to an iWeary employee and or a department employee regarding the model, My question would be whether or not Mr. Wiley is adequate for that purpose, if he's going to be presented as a department employee,
Background. I think Mr. Wiley probably would be adequate.
Okay.
We just named the other one. We're not sure whether Mr. Wiley might ask him some modeling questions, and he said, gee, I don't know, you'll have to ask the Agwiri people, and I didn't want to get caught not disclosing him, so.
Well, IGWA has a request to the department to disclose a person to testify on the curtailment scenarios that Agwiri ran, and we're still resolving that.
Okay.
We may name an Agwiri person as opposed to Ellen Wiley.
When did that happen?
Well, I hope to have that information before this conference, but I haven't gotten it yet. So
sometime
it'll
next
be
week.
Soon, yes.
So we can count on Wiley. We don't have to worry about Cosgrove and other.
I'm saying there may be someone from my weary that the department will name. Yeah.
And so if that happened, Phil, that person would testify right after the lay witnesses. Would they be in the same category as IDWR employees or witnesses to that extent? Or would that be someone that IGWA would, since they identified and requested the availability of that person?
Well,
I'm thinking of.
I don't know. I guess it was IGWA that requested.
Well, we just asked that they identify a witness that could testify about the curtailment scenarios and what the resulting impacts would be on groundwater pumpers. And if that's Alan Wiley, that's fine. If it's one of the Agwiri folks, that's okay too. We just didn't know who the witness would be to testify on that. We thought it was Alan Wiley, but.
And I think that should just fall into the water resources witness group.
Exactly.
Anybody going to make opening statements? And
I didn't see it was necessary given all the briefing and stuff that's been there. Whatever the hearing officer's pleasure is.
All I would actually request would be a very brief statement, perhaps each day, that I'm going to call this witness who will testify in this area, so or to give me that knowledge the day before, actually at the end of the preceding day, who the next witnesses will be and the subject that they will be addressing. Okay. Anything else that we need to address at this time?
Well, Your Honor, with regard to witnesses, then I'd like to know who are the lay witnesses that IGWA intends to present. We have a disclosure here listing 13. There were filings just the other day. I'm wondering what is the scope of
sure. We had disclosed a long list. We pre-filed testimony for Lynn Carlquist, Dean Stevenson, and Ken Dunn. And at this point, the other witnesses those are the only ones we presently contemplate calling on the list. We may call Gary Funderburg and Mike Eggleston, and that would, I guess, depend a little bit on what came out of you folks as lay witnesses. The only thing that I did want to comment on, since their testimony was pre-filed, if there's no cross-examination by anybody on some pre-filed witness, maybe let us know so we don't bring them when we get to that point. And we did have, the only one we have a timing problem with is Mr. Dunn. He's available any time prior to December 12th, but he's gone after December 12th.
Now, with respect to Mr. Dunn, I've looked at his direct testimony. It looks like the exclusive subject matter of his testimony is the Swan Falls Agreement.
Correct.
And that the question of the Swan Falls Agreement has been resolved on summary judgment.
Correct.
So on what basis would you be presenting his testimony on an issue that's been resolved prior to hearing?
in order to establish a complete record for appeal?
Well, the record on summary judgment's been established. And I've looked through the affidavit, and it repeats many of the same statements and opinions that were in the original affidavit, and then essentially augments the prior information with additional information.
Correct.
It seems to me it's improper to have that testimony presented at the hearing, since the issue has been resolved, and it equates to essentially augmenting the record in summary judgment.
Well, that's an issue for the hearing officer to decide. Our impression was that we wanted the full record here, and if we needed to file a motion to reconsider to make sure that's in the record, we would do that.
I would, if you put him on, I would treat it as an offer of proof. I'm not going to back up unless creeks rise higher than I anticipate. But you're entitled to make an offer of proof in one form or another, either a written summary of what he would testify to if allowed to testify, or testify. I assume it wouldn't take very long.
No, that our offer of proof would simply be his written testimony. So the question would come whether you want to further cross-examining on that testimony. So if you wanted the right to cross-examine, then we'd make sure he's here so you'd have that right. If not, our offer of proof would essentially just be what he's pre-filed.
Okay. And if that's going to be the course, then I take it the opportunity exists for Spring users to make corresponding offers of proof regarding the Swan Falls agreement or other issues that you addressed on summary judgment. Is that?
I think you can make offers of proof throughout. I don't anticipate doing differently from what I've done, but I do want a full record, so if a reviewing court acts differently, that the record is complete.
Well, then we very well may need to cross-examine Mr. Dunn, particularly with respect to the new opinions that he's being asked to provide.
Well, we'll make sure when we have arrangements to get him here no later before the 12th, and then you guys can decide if you choose not to. Then we won't.
Certainly, at this point, as I requested previously, a chance to depose Mr. Dunn and other witnesses you identified. I think it was within our right and still is within our right to at least cross-examine. And I did make multiple requests to depose the fact witnesses you identified. And
you made verbal requests. There were no notices of taking deposition filed on him or any other lay witnesses.
I requested twice, once in writing.
Correct.
Through emails, and the position of IGWA was that the schedule didn't allow for depositions.
Correct.
Of lay witnesses. And nowhere in the record was that described one way or the other. So,
well, what do you anticipate would be different about his testimony than has been previously submitted?
The affidavit would contain, by and large, most everything that was presented on the summary judgment motion. So most everything is in the record. There are some minor additional testimony in his pre-file testimony that went slightly beyond the affidavit. I don't have it in front of me to take an exact look at it.
That's the affidavit. They're entire new pages. There's a great deal of new testimony here. I have gone through the affidavit and the direct testimony and compared them. So there's a substantial difference here.
In what areas?
Well, having just gotten it, I haven't examined them closely, but the testimony at page 5 regarding a lawsuit preceding the Swan Falls agreement, states attitudes preceding the Swan Falls agreement, that looks to me to be new. There's new information here regarding some publication called Idaho Currents, it looks to me like. And then the last page contains, last two pages look entirely new to me regarding, there's a question, believe, do you, it's a question that relates to priority date of I guess there's a typo here, 2984. There's a 1984 priority date reference, and then some extensive discussion regarding the effect of the Swan Falls Agreement with regard to water rights before or after October 1, 1984. That's new. So we've got new theories, perhaps, even being offered here. I don't know.
Yeah, I didn't recognize any new theories from what I'd read, but what do you, are you going to make an offer of proof that covers anything that would raise a different theory? And the ruling is basically on the face of the agreement and the decree that was entered that subsequent to that agreement.
And we'd contemplate the offer proof would be on all of your direct testimony, and without laying it side by side, but if there aren't any new theories, I think there were some additional exhibits and maybe elaboration on what he discussed in his affidavit. But the affidavit filed in the summary judgment motion essentially covered the arguments on the Swan Falls issue. I think the pre-file testimony lays it out in somewhat greater detail in question and answer form.
Can you submit prior to hearing simply an offer of proof that designates this? The offer of proof consists of this and the pre-file testimony and the affidavits and then anything else, and then we'll have something to actually address. So if there's a need to examine, to expand that offer of proof, we can know that. But it sounded to me like I didn't hear anything that would cause me to say, oops, did I miss something? And I just want to make a record, have a record existing for reviewing courts. Okay. What else?
Well, I think we should, I think we've had this discussion before, but perhaps given the passage of time and what's been filed and all the deposition, maybe we should have it again. I didn't contemplate that the deposition would be used as evidence presented in the case other than as necessary in conjunction with cross-examination of a witness. First of all, secondly, since we have pre-filed direct and rebuttal testimony, my anticipation was we would not have any live testimony from expert witnesses other than to identify their pre-file direct and their rebuttal testimony and their exhibits. If there's any corrections that may be appropriate relating to those, and then I considered that the usual request would be made that their testimony and exhibits would be spread on the record and they would then be tendered to cross-examination. So the in essence, we would simply be cross-examining expert witnesses.
Start with the threshold that their depositions aren't evidence. It's their pre-filed testimony, and depositions can be used for cross-examination, but they're not evidence as such. Everybody in agreement?
As is normally the case.
Okay. Okay.
We have one other question we have that relates, I suppose, to the nature and scope of the spring users' lay testimony. We still have before us your September 10, 2007 order regarding discovery, and paragraph 2 of that order, which dealt with the issue of whether we're able to look at economic testimony and records and determine whether more fish means more water and is there going to be material injury if they have more water or not. The ruling that was entered on that when we were not allowed to discover into any tax returns, any economic information, any information regarding the what they're going to do with more water. The order is addressing that states, however, if that information is not, and I'm reading paragraph 2 of your September 10th order. However, if that information is not produced in discovery, Blue Lakes and Clear Springs may not introduce information from the records to support any position they assert, e.g., more water allows the production of more fish or larger healthy fish. And as I go through the disclosure of witnesses, particularly with respect to Clear Lakes, they made a disclosure of their lay witnesses. They gave no indication on that disclosure of what their witnesses would testify to. Mr. Simpson, when I asked him to file that amendment to disclose what they were going to testify to, gave me a very general, somewhat off-the-cuff description. Here's what they'll talk about. And referred us back to their discovery responses, set forth that information. As I review their answer to discovery requests, they've made no disclosure of what any of their witnesses are going to testify to. My only concern is that they now bring forth a witness such as Dr. McMillan, who clearly would have expert testimony, and as a lay witness attempt to introduce expert information that more water means more fish, more water means healthier fish, more water means larger fish. That was specifically precluded by this order. We were not allowed to discover into it. I want to make sure that we don't have any misunderstanding that they will not, through a lay witness, attempt to present expert information or any information relating to more water means more fish, healthier fish, or bigger fish. They did have an opportunity to disclose that, and they didn't disclose anything, so we're assuming that none of that evidence will be presented, and I thought it might be better just to clarify that.
There's
now
a distinction between introduction of the records to establish that and perhaps independent expert testimony that more water means more fish. So let's talk about
they
that.
They didn't present any expert testimony on that. So no expert testimony is presented. Now we have lay witnesses, but they disclosed Mr. McMillan as a lay witness, which is fine, and we expect he'll testify. But if he wants to go in to present anything that would be precluded by this ruling, I think we ought to get that up front. Or if they intend to utilize him to present any expert testimony, that he was not disclosed as an expert, didn't file testimony.
Simply what I told counsel when he asked regarding the testimony of either Mr. Cope or Mr. McMillan was that they would testify as to Clear Springs and its operations, and more specifically, the Snake River Farms facility, for which is a part of Clear Springs' overall operations and business practice. And it's my intent to offer Mr. McMillan and or Mr. Cope to lay out the design of the Snake River Farms facility itself, the construction of it, basically that it was designed to facilitate the use of the water that was pertinent to the water rights they acquired when they acquired the Snake River facility, and that in the design of the raceways and such, they designed them to handle a certain capacity of water to grow fish. And you, Your Honor, in your decision, referenced that the question, or at least raised the point of, what does it mean when water's in raceways? Does it mean that if there's water in the raceways that there's fish production happening? And part of our explanation, part of our presentation to describe these facilities at the hearing is to describe how the water is used, how it's used multiple times through the facility, and how that water is put to beneficial use. And part of that is, given the quality of the water and such, that quality amounts to production, and it does amount to healthy fish.
Are you going to rely on any production records, tax records, anything of that nature?
No, we're not bringing any production records or tax records. And I believe, as you yourself described, when that order was being discussed in September, was in the context of production records or tax records. And the statement was made generally, if they are going to rely upon tax records or production records, then conversely, it would be the same for the groundwater pumpers. They would have to produce theirs. So the only point I could think that would be made is if there was testimony by the groundwater users regarding production at their various farming practices or facilities, or overall as a groundwater district, then does it become relevant with respect to whether a facility grows a certain amount of fish, or if water appeared in the springs in addition to what was there historically to meet their needs? Would that water be put to beneficial use, and if so, how much?
Well, the main difference here is they made no discovery requests with respect to anything that the farmers do or don't do with water and what more crops they use. We made some very specific discovery requests trying to get at the issue of whether or not the spring users, if they had more water, would be able to economically produce fish and put it to beneficial use. Or is the market such that additional water and additional production does not enable them to market fish profitably and operate economically? And the spring users chose to file a motion to, they objected to that discovery request and ultimately tried to keep us from getting at that information. And as I recall, the hearing officer indicated, well, if you're going to come to the hearing and now use that shield against the groundwater users and not allow them to look at the economics of fish production, we're not going to allow you to show up at the hearing and now use that as a sword. And so they had the option to decide, we're going to go ahead and make a disclosure of financial information and economic information because we do want to use it as a sword. They chose not to make that disclosure, and now we are still left with this order that says we're not going to allow them to put on information from the records about fish production, and more water is more fish, or healthy fish, or bigger fish. So it certainly is going to be unfair to the groundwater users and put us at a disadvantage to be faced for the very first time at hearing with essentially expert testimony that more water produces more fish and bigger fish, when we were barred or shielded from being able to pursue discovery into that particular issue. We have no way to combat oral testimony when we were not allowed to look at their production record to see what it means. And that was the ruling that was made. It was made at their request, and they still had the option of saying, gee, we now want to present information that more water is bigger fish and healthier fish. And they chose not to disclose the information, so now we're at the hearing. They certainly should not be in a position to say, yes, we're going to shield you from all of our records of an economic and financial nature, but now that we're at the hearing, you don't get the benefit of that. We're going to take our shield down and draw our swords and use that to put on that kind of information. And I just envision just what was going to happen.
Well, Your Honor,
Mr. Simpson describes.
I may speak to it. We are going to put on a person in a managerial position with Blue Lakes to describe the operations and verify that if additional water is provided, they will put it to beneficial use to raise more fish, larger, healthier fish. Just as when Clear Lakes Trout Company, one of my clients, was curtailed in order to supply water to another trout company, production records were precluded and deemed by this department to be unnecessary. And so we disclosed that Mr. Caswell would be describing the operations and speaking to the facility's water shortage, and he's going to do so. He had been available for deposition. That deposition was not pursued, did not occur. And so we are now in a position, I think, to put on a relatively straightforward presentation verifying, as this department requires, that if the water is delivered, it will be put to beneficial use. And it's a future use. So there is no production record existing today as to how much additional fish will be raised as incremental amounts of water return. And as we all know, it's very unlikely that water is going to come back in packages or blocks or delivered on a truck or a train. It's going to come back slowly over time. So the increase in production will occur gradually, incrementally, over time as the water comes back. And so it's pretty simple presentation.
See, I think everybody knows, I'm uncomfortable with the ruling that production records were not to be sought or could not be discovered. I did that based upon a ruling of the district court, which is the superior authority in this. The question I've always had in my mind is, how do we get to the point of saying that more water, more fish, if we can't see something that shows that that's actually the case? Where do fish come from? If you have more water, do you ship them in from someplace? Do they breed in the raceways? What happens? And production records always have seemed to me like one of the classically discoverable elements, except that it's a ruling in this proceeding that seems to preclude that. And so the line between testimony that it will be put to beneficial use and transgressing over into the production records is pretty fine. And it sounds an awful lot like expert testimony that if you have the water, there'll be more fish or healthier fish or bigger fish because...
Well, Your Honor, it's no more expert than a farmer saying, when you take the water away, I'll produce less crop. It's the exact same thing. It's not a matter of expert knowledge or experience. It's a matter of the daily farming experience of these managers. They daily and annually make decisions like Mr. Stevenson and Mr. Carlquist, who are presented to testify on extensive matters regarding farming operations, about how they're going to pursue their daily livelihood. This is the essence of their livelihood.
Well, I don't agree it's the same because crops are much more subject to observable evaluation than our fish. I commented, and I wasn't being facetious when I commented earlier, that the intricacies and the understanding of raising fish is different from raising crops, I believe. We can all grow up around crops, see whether they're healthy or they're dying, and we know good farmers, we know bad farmers. I've had expert testimony in cases where same land, same water, one farmer produced vastly more than another, and I don't think we break it down into that, but we don't know what's the amount of water necessary for a healthy fish. And that sounds a lot like expert testimony.
Well, again, it's a matter of it's how these managers manage their operations. It's how people who manage each facility perform their daily function. So, again, it's no more a matter of expertise than it is for a farmer up on the plain. It's something you personally haven't seen before, but I can assure you, if you see a dead fish, you'll know it's dead. And you know, these facilities.
But you don't know whether it's ick or something else.
It could be from a variety of causes. But you know, these companies take fish of a certain size. Fingerling is the term they use, and they raise them to maturity and they sell them. It's a pretty straightforward equation.
Where do fingerling come from?
Well, they can be shipped in from a variety of suppliers.
So there are
they can be raised from eggs right there at the facility.
But there are suppliers of fingerling.
Yeah.
And we're going to get that testimony.
Or more typically, you know, the facilities are in this particular part of Idaho because of the high-quality water that's available. Producing the eggs themselves and rearing the fingerlings and then moving out to the larger raceways and raising them to maturity and then taking.
This is exactly what the rules of evidence address. Rule 701 distinguishes clearly from the lay testimony versus expert testimony under Rule 702. And lay testimony under Rule 701 does not include the sub C, not based on scientific, technical, or other specialized knowledge. And this is exactly what we have. We anticipated they would file testimony from their expert about fish production and more fish is bigger fish, or more water is bigger fish, or more fish are healthy fish. None of those things were filed. We have no knowledge of that. They barred us from looking at their financial or economic records or production records, anything to deal with that economic issue, and now come along and anticipate through witnesses that are clearly lay witness presenting what is quite obviously scientific, technical, and specialized knowledge, and we have no opportunity to rebut that. We have no expert now that we can rebut that with, and we're certainly put at a substantial disadvantage. And the ruling on that particular issue goes very hand in hand with the ruling on that same day on whether or not we could get at spring construction improvements, collection facilities, diversion facilities, alternative means. And we were also precluded from discovery into those items pre the decree in 2000 by the spring users. And now we have an abundance of information on that very subject, that recirculation, reuse is very common in the industry and is feasible and can be done, but it's an area that we have not been able to go into, and I'm very concerned that they now use lay witnesses to come in and testify about the economics, more water, more fish, and I suppose the Clear Springs witnesses, who do have some minor circulation as to why they can't expand that circulation, why they can't deal with effluents, the difficulty in meeting the permitting requirements under the EPA standards, all of those things, clearly is technical expert testimony that should not be allowed, given the fact they chose not to file it as expert testimony. And if they were allowed to bring in that in on a lay witness basis, we are certainly at a distinct disadvantage and prejudices.
Then, Your Honor, I suppose the status of things is this, that the director has made his finding of material injury, and if the groundwater users want no presentation to address that finding, it will stand. It will go unaddressed. It will be no further informed by this process, and it won't be rebutted by the groundwater users.
Well, the evidence, as I recollected at that point, was that there was that the water master went out and observed that when there was water in the raceways, that there were fish in the raceways. And that, at least, is a threshold showing, I guess, that that if there's water, you raise fish. I'm very uncomfortable with the inability to get into the reality tax records now. I mean, tax records are, I would preclude in any event, because markets, lots of things unrelated to the production of fish go into that. But the production of fish as such, and what can be done with water, does seem like expert testimony. The amount of water that's necessary to raise fish.
Again, Your Honor, this is what some pretty ordinary folk do for a living, and what, you know, these facilities often were started by digging a hole in the ground, putting water in there, and knowing, I know Mr. Budge is the fisherman, that fish need water to live, they need water to survive. That, so if you start basic, that fact is not specialized. And obviously in a small pond, it's not possible to have as many fish as you can have in a big pond. I don't think that's specialized knowledge or too unique. I think it's also pretty common knowledge that fish need oxygen. And without oxygen, fish don't make it. And it's on the basis of some pretty straightforward facts such as these that these fishing operations were started. Now, sure, there are more technical factors that go into modern commercial fish operation. But the basic notion, the basic understanding, that in a small fish bowl you can only have so many fish, and in a larger fish tank you can have more, is not unique. It's not specialized. It's not limited to those with expertise. That's basically what we're talking about here.
There's an issue. I don't know. Some creatures don't grow larger depending upon their environment. Other creatures grow larger. Is there going to be evidence on that, that if there's more water, are you going to attempt to offer evidence that if there's more water, fish grow larger?
Well, with more water, the stocking densities can change. And there's an optimal stocking rate at which if you go beyond it, you start to deprive fish of a healthy environment. That shouldn't be a surprise to anyone who doesn't have specialized expertise. But the basic principle here is yes, more water, more fish. It was, we in deposing the director, and he will testify, and this is within his discretion to evaluate, that he was satisfied with the inquiry that Cindy Enter made when she curtailed one of my clients to supply, required one of my clients to remove thousands and thousands of fish in order to supply water to somebody else. The showing satisfied the water master at that point. It satisfied the director at that point, justifying severe economic impact to the person who was using the water prior to the curtailment. And the director has said that it satisfies him, or the former director, the showing remains satisfactory to him. So one of the things that I think we all need to be cognizant of is the precedent that this case will set for water masters in having to verify that the calling senior will put the water to beneficial use. Will the water master be required to go out and examine production records and make inquire of experts and make judgments beyond their expertise about whether or not the calling senior really needs the water, really can put it to beneficial use? Because that's part of the outcome here, it seems to me, if we go that far here.
Your Honor, I might add that nowhere it has been contemplated by Clear Springs that they would bring in testimony regarding their production over the past number of years as opposed to previous number of years, or their tax revenues. And that was the subject of what we were discussing in September, were production records, historical production records, historical tax records. But clearly, when a senior makes a delivery call, they have just to indicate that they'll put that water to beneficial use. And is that inquiry something more than just a statement? Well, in the delivery calls that Clear Springs has been involved in, it did not. But if there was a dispute about whether or not an entity could put that water to beneficial use, then there would have to be some description about what would that additional beneficial use constitute. We don't anticipate putting that on because we believe that a senior has a right to that water, and a statement regarding their need and their willingness to put that water to beneficial use and their ability to do such is sufficient.
Your Honor?
Go ahead.
Just a couple of comments here. Maybe we're about to wrap this debate up, I don't know. But first of all, with regard to Dan's comment about the status of the director's order with regard to injury, I just would remind everyone that those orders are emergency orders that specifically were issued pre-hearing, before testimony, before evidence, based on perceived emergency conditions under that provision of the Administrative Procedure Act, which specifically contemplates a de novo hearing. So that's what we're here for. We aren't, at least in our view, we're not looking at a situation where the director's order is due any particular deference in any particular way. It's a de novo hearing. And with regard to proof of beneficial use, the issue of beneficial use and whether whether all the water being called for will be put to beneficial use is indeed an issue that is a live issue in this case, in part because of the of what the Supreme Court has said in AFRD number 2.
One more.
Well, I just think that we're down to that fundamental issue that they have some burden to show that water can be applied to beneficial use. And I don't have any problem with general descriptions of how their facilities operate. But if they're now going to use their witnesses, particularly Dr. McMillan, who in their own webpage goes on at great length to talk about his expertise on how water is used, how they have abundant spring water, how they deal with chemicals, how they deal with pathological issues. He's clearly a witness that's going to testify about specialized knowledge and expertise he has insofar as growing fish, and that we can use more water beneficially, and we can grow fish bigger and better and more of them, and that we can do so economically, are all fundamental issues in this case that deal with clearly expert testimony. And if they're going to come in with lay witnesses and put expert testimony on that we have had no opportunity to rebut, and they certainly had ample opportunity to present their expert testimony, then we're certainly prejudiced, and it doesn't comply with the scheduling order that sets some pretty clear deadlines on how we're going to handle expert testimony and how we're going to handle lay testimony.
Well, it's ultimately at the hearing going to come down to almost a question-by-question basis. And in broad terms, it's I think that there's it's clearly allowable that their raceways are developed or built to accommodate a certain number of fish. And if there's no water, they don't accommodate those fish. If it gets beyond that into what appears to be expert testimony that has not been presented as expert testimony, that'll preclude it. If it, if to verify anything, it gets into records of production over the years, then preclude it because the bar was put up. But there is, I think, there is ample room to offer evidence that raceways have to have water in order to produce fish. As far as balancing, you're talking, I think, about balancing the economics. If and I don't think we get into whether the market's down, you just go out of business, which is a fear is what I hear suggested, because that put a lot of farmers out of business if you started gauging whether it was a profitable operation in a particular year.
The point was is if they can use more water to make more fish because the EPA permitting requirements will not allow them to have any more effluents in the river, which is a question. We have not been able to go into any of those questions.
No. The EPA discharge records were produced. Candace, you reviewed them. You were able to take copies of them. So it is not at all the case that you are precluded from discovering, discovering the discharge records, which show in detail the discharges of these facilities.
But you have new permitting requirements. They were just in the paper. There can be no more phosphorus submitted into the river system. And you're going to put on some expert witness that, yes, we can meet requirements, and, yes, we can produce more fish, and it will have more effluents, and more effluents will go in the river, and, yes, we can qualify, therefore we can use water beneficially. All involves technical knowledge and expertise that can't come through a lay witness. That's the trouble that we have. We have no way to go in on cross-examination and be able to question your witnesses about any of these ideas of more fish is more water, more fish, or that you can meet
place for years,
or that you can meet these standards. So it may be that more water can't be used beneficially because the environmental rules that you now operate under, according to what EPA says, will not allow you to use any more water and produce any more fish. So the same, more water may produce the same amount of fish that you can produce with less water. Therefore, you don't have beneficial use of water.
Your Honor, if Mr. Budge wants to explore that by way of cross-examination, I'm sure he will. These requirements that you're just learning about have been in place for years.
That's the question. Is there something new on the table that nobody has had a right, an opportunity to respond to in terms of limitations?
Well, certainly. Had they produced expert testimony that we can produce more water with more fish, then we would have an opportunity to file our rebuttal expert testimony that no, you can't, because there is a new EPA requirement that said there can be no increase in the discharge of effluents in that reach of the river.
It's not what those requirements say.
We didn't have that opportunity to, so it isn't fair to force me in to try to cross-examine an expert when we haven't had an opportunity to see his area of knowledge or expertise. And
when you talk about a new requirement, how new are we talking about?
Well, I read it in the paper last week that the EPA promulgated new permitting requirements that said that no fish producer can discharge any more phosphorus into the reach of the river. And the newspaper article quoted their witness, Dr. McMillan, as stating that this was going to have adverse economic effects on the fish industry, but he felt that most would still be able to survive. So their own witness has apparently looked at these EPA requirements and give an indication that he was quoted about in the paper last week, saying that this new restriction that precludes the discharge of more any effluents into the river is going to have an adverse economic effect on it.
But that's not a past production record that was sought in the discovery. We're talking about something different.
No, but it's
different.
Expert testimony that this same Dr. McMillan and their other witnesses, are they going to be allowed to come in here and testify on specialized knowledge and information and expertise relating to the fish operation, that they can use more water to produce more fish or healthier fish or bigger fish? That is clearly expert testimony that we've had no way to challenge by filing our rebuttal testimony. And certainly we're going to be prejudiced to try to go in and cross-examine some witness on testimony that we hear for the first time.
Why? Well, Mr. Budge begs the question of whether it's expert testimony to say that raceways have a capacity to carry water, and with more water, you can raise more fish. And I think you're correct, Your Honor, that as to that basic proposition, it is not, does not constitute expert testimony. And again, you know, I was in the position of seeking production records before this department and was denied that opportunity by this department and the district court. And because it was not deemed to be necessary to verify the water would be put to beneficial use.
Well, as I say, we're going to almost go question by question, but we'll do it in that fashion.
Your Honor, on another matter, with respect to expertise, I guess since the question is being raised now, we have these recent direct testimony reports of Lynn Carlquist and Dean Stevenson, farmers who, at least in part at page 11, are going to testify about the effect of curtailment on the region's economy. These folks have not been qualified as economists with such expertise. So are we in a position where, as Mr. Budge suggests here, we've got lay witnesses being offered to provide expert testimony?
It's a little simpler question, I think, on that. I mean, if you don't have water, you can't produce, I assume, anything. Where are you going to go with that?
Well, I think that it's an entirely different matter to ask a farmer if they can certainly testify on whether or not they can or cannot raise crops if they don't have water. I think that's the fundamental, is to be common sense to allow a farmer to testify as to what happens if he's deprived of water. He can't raise crops, he can't operate financially, nor can other farmers in the district. These are the chairman of the groundwater district that are simply presenting testimony that without water, they can't raise crops. I don't think that raises to the level of any kind of scientific technical testimony.
You're not coming in with global type testimony as Mr. Church or Dr. Church, whichever it is,
we
would testify.
No.
Just
Dr. Church will testify as to the economic issues.
Well, again, it sounds like, again, for an agriculturalist, the basic, there's a concession here that the basic relationship between water and being able to raise your crop does not require, not constitute expert testimony. This testimony does mention aggregate effects in the millions of dollars, so I'll be interested to see on what basis these farmers have gained such information. But I suppose it will, as you suggest, be a question by question issue.
Okay. What else?
Still ahead.
I fear to ask anybody to prepare minutes on this, but can somebody prepare them just on the order of testimony and the sequencing of things and leave these issues as to evidence out and on the table so we'll rule as question by question comes up? Okay. Who wants to do it without controversy?
I don't.
Did Phil answer the question of when they were going to identify the eye weary person?
Next week is all.
Oh, okay. I didn't hear.
Yeah. I'll prepare an order of witnesses, and if that's wrong, tell me. I think I have it.
Now, the department is putting an MP3 recording on our website, so if anyone needs to review the tape, it'll be available.
Oh, and with regard to recording, Phil, did you decide how you want to handle that at hearing? You'd asked me at some point whether or not we thought we needed a court reporter there. It might be worthwhile to discuss that briefly.
Right, and you indicated some concern about the equipment that the department used in the past, and certainly the department shared that concern. We now have a setup that we feel comfortable with, and I guess it's this setup right here. But my question about the court reporter was whether the attorneys felt they wanted a transcript for the next day's proceedings or something. If they wanted that, they would have to do that on their own.
Fine, we're comfortable with the recorder.
Well, we are in recess.
Thank you.